New Zealand is enjoying a period of being one of the few countries in the world that can hold mass events. But how long will the current situation last? How long can it last? The Economist magazine last week published a story with the headline, Australia and New Zealand cannot hide from COVID-19 forever. I'm personally a big fan, by the way, of the Economist magazine. I find if you have an issue that you're thinking about and you want a sort of an ideology-free take on it, it's always a good place to go. Well, Eric Crampton from the New Zealand Initiative, which was interviewed for this piece, has been wrestling with the data and the views on this one, and he joins me now to answer what next for New Zealand. Hi there, Eric.
Good afternoon.
Nice to have you in. And is this an interesting question for you as well, what the plan is for New Zealand over the medium to long term?
Well, of course. So in the immediate term, we've been doing well. We've kept COVID out, and the immediate response was right. But vaccination is going to take a little while to progress here. And as vaccination progresses abroad, I kind of wonder how we start thinking about travel by people who are vaccinated from places where vaccination has been rolled out pretty broadly and COVID rates have come down. So right now, our border settings are kind of, they're split three ways. We've got a bubble with Australia that can be suspended whenever things get a bit dodgy, and that's the right approach for Australia. There's the MIQ requirements for everywhere else in the world, except for places where we ban travel when it's absolutely too risky to even let them into MIQ. The absolutely too risky, that also makes sense. Sometimes the border slips in MIQ, and having too many people coming in who are infected would be a really big issue. But as vaccination progresses in places like the UK and the US and Canada and Israel, travel by vaccinated people who've been tested before travel and who are tested on arrival, well, we might start thinking a little bit differently about that. When we set the bubble with Australia, we retired a lot of MIQ spaces that were considered to be too risky to handle people from places that were riskier than Australia. Those facilities perhaps could be used for travelers who are vaccinated from places without much COVID because vaccination has knocked the virus down. But we don't have the settings to deal with that yet. And we've not really been comfortable in having those kinds of conversations. We've had a lot of families that have been split by the border. We've got a lot of skilled migrants here who've not seen their families for over a year and are starting to just leave because they see no prospect of getting their families in. Re-enabling that kind of humanitarian travel by expanding MIQ capacity to accommodate people who've been vaccinated and present less risk would be a really good thing. Strengthening testing within MIQ to have a better handle on how risky things are, that would also be a really good thing. The government has started rolling out saliva-based testing for some border workers, but really we should be looking at expanding it to everyone who's in MIQ to reduce within MIQ transmission and to make it a lot safer to accommodate more people. We'd also learn more. So if we started admitting vaccinated people who are coming from places where COVID rates had come down, we could start finding out pretty quickly, well, how long of a stay in quarantine is really needed. Start with the 14 days, but you could start scaling it back if everybody who comes in with COVID despite vaccination and despite testing before travel, if they're all caught in the first few days and nothing else is caught after that, well, we could start thinking about what the duration really needs to be.
It makes a lot of people very uncomfortable. People are allergic to talking about this idea, I find, and possibly the reason is that it sounds, if you're not listening closely, it sounds like this is a suggestion that we should relax our risk, that we should accept some more risk in order to promote economic activity, among other things, but you also mentioned your family reunions and other humanitarian reasons. But can I be clear that you're not suggesting that we increase the risk? You are just looking for ways to maintain around the same level of risk, to not be overly risk-averse just because those are the settings we currently have.
Well, right now, we don't really have a risk-averse system. We've got a very status quo biased system. So there are measures that the government could take to reduce risk within MIQ that it has not been taking. And it seems incomprehensible why such as daily testing of visitors within MIQ. So there are the swab tests that are taken, get a test on arrival, then there's the two tests while you're in MIQ, but there is risk of transmission within MIQ. And if you had daily saliva testing or very close to daily, you would catch infections before they had a chance to cross-contaminate.
Yeah, and you know the governments move slowly, and there are signs that saliva testing is being slowly adopted, too slowly for most of us probably, but that is happening, sure.
Well, they've rolled it out to some border workers. Mm. They've not rolled it out to people within MIQ. It's been a little frustrating because one provider has had this available since early January and was able to roll it out to everyone in there.
Yeah, we've talked about saliva testing before as well. So you are saying that we have this snapshot of New Zealand's border policy as it is at the moment, but that we shouldn't assume that this is going to be the snapshot for the next year or 5 years, and that we should be openly and transparently talking about what the options are, even if we eventually reject them.
Well, the system that we had in place was put in place in a hurry, and it made a lot of sense in that very short term. If we're thinking, though, that the vaccine rollout will take at least until December, and, well, if we're going to be realistic about it, do you really think that the government will consider us to have gotten far enough through vaccination by the end of the year that they'll be comfortable with borders reopening in a more general sense? I don't think so. I am expecting that the rollout will wind up being a little slower than they'd hope, because everything else has been a little slower than we'd hoped. And there's always risk that new variants will be coming up abroad that would require higher vaccination rates mm-hmm. than we've wanted to have.
There's no magic day when we open up borders.
Yeah, well, we will not be fully reopening. That would be, well, we're just not ready for that. There was some work that was done by economists in Australia that was reported by Josh Gans, an economist out of Toronto, who's Australian by background, suggesting that if we reopened to international travel and got the exact same visitor numbers as we'd been having before COVID, this was in the Australian case, there would be outbreaks. So even if you were using sort of best practice, if you got the numbers that high, there would be outbreaks again.
So if not that, then the question is, what is the next way to loosen things, to safely loosen things beyond the Australian bubble? And what do you think those might look like?
Well, I think we need to have a more risk-sensitive approach. So it's not this sort of three-tier thing, but more gradated, and strengthening procedures within MIQ to reduce the absolute level of risk that's presented. So we should be looking at places like Singapore, which are moving very quickly in vaccination. We can trust records from places like Singapore, and their COVID rates are coming down. So as their vaccination progresses, their COVID rates will start coming down to levels that would be more comparable with Australia's. At that point, why wouldn't we be thinking about a travel bubble for vaccinated people from Singapore? Or once Taiwan's gotten its current outbreak back under control, for most of the past year, their rates were below Australia's, and there's been no consideration of a travel bubble with them. Right now, we would be in a closed bubble because they've had an outbreak, but we'd be looking to reopen again once it had that under control. We should be thinking about what other countries we might be able to extend the travel bubble to. As their COVID rates come down and as vaccination progresses, Taiwan is as bad as us on vaccination, but other places will get their rates down with vaccination, and we should be able to start re-enabling travel by vaccinated people from safe places under, well, a more limited quarantine measure.
Yes, and it's very easy to write this off and say, well, this is just right-wing thinking, or you're just thinking of money or economics safety. But New Zealand will have to change at some point, and people might disagree with you about when that happens. People might think the right time is in 10 years' time or 5 years' time, but the question is, well, the issue is, we should be able to talk about it openly without accusing people of having hidden motivations. We just need to agree or at least start having a discussion about what the plan is.
Well, full cards on the table. I've got a daughter who's asthmatic, who's been in hospital over the past couple of days with a severe asthma outbreak. I am terrified by the chances of her especially getting the virus. I do not want us to be taking on a lot more risk. That's not where I'm coming from. Instead, it's how do we reduce risk within the system by taking up opportunities to reduce risk and then using that to enable more safe travel by vaccinated people again. Because at the same time as I want to protect my daughter, I would also like her to be able to eventually see her grandparents again.
And there I'm sorry to hear that, by the way. That is about the worst thing that can happen, is having a child who's unwell that you're worried about. So thanks for taking the time to do this with us today, by the way. And I guess the broader question, New Zealanders this is my view, rightly proud of what we achieved last year and became, you know, part of what was necessary for that was a bit of locked-in thinking, a bit of teamwork, a bit of let's do this for the greater good. And is there a danger that when we all move as one like that, and to a large extent everyone agreed on the approach, is there a danger that you then become unwilling to consider new ideas or alternatives later down the track?
Well, what was interesting in the first period was not the rigidity, but the flexibility. So we were all moving together, but it very quickly went from a suppression strategy of trying to flatten the curves to just, okay, no, let's get rid of the thing and then have tight border system to keep it out. That happened pretty rapidly. And after that happened, we've seen more of an ossification that we've not considered opportunities to either change the system to reduce risk and enable more travel or to extend bubbles more broadly than just Australia. And that could be fine if we were thinking about like a 6-month period, but the costs of maintaining closed borders or so close to closed as makes no odds because there's no way of getting a space in MIQ because the booking system's a mess and they're not able to really tell how many people are getting multiple books and holding spaces they don't need. We need more flexible system if this is going to be here for a longer period because the costs only mount. If you're separated from your family for a month, well, that's different than being separated from them for more than 400 days and counting, right? It's untenable over the longer period, not just the humanitarian costs, but then also the economic costs.
Will New Zealand's borders or our border policy ever look like it did in December 2019 again?
It'll take a while to get there, I expect. I'm expecting that we'll have some vaccination requirements for an ongoing period. But this is hardly new, right? So we have had, when I migrated to New Zealand in the first place, I had to provide proof of vaccination. I had to go through two separate tests for tuberculosis because my old medical checks expired while I was waiting for the police background checks from Canada. Anyways, there's a long history of having to be able to present vaccination records, at least as part of coming into the country as a visa process. Vaccination passports are likely to become more required, even for short-term visitors. Singapore and Hong Kong are already looking at ways of mutually recognizing each other's vaccination certificates. I desperately hope that New Zealand is in on those conversations and making sure that our systems will be recognized by others as well, while we're recognizing theirs to start re-enabling travel by people who can provide that kind of proof of vaccination. Once you've got that and those reliable systems, though, we should be able to be more flexible for travel by people who are vaccinated and who can provide reasonable test results. Singapore's even testing right now a breath test that looks something like one of the blow-in-the-tube breathalyzer alcohol checks, and it provides COVID test results in minutes. If that thing proves successful, we should be looking at adopting that into our border system, right? Because we reduce risk. The more we can do to reduce risk, the more we can do to enable safe travel.
Eric, hope your daughter gets well soon. Thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Eric Crampton with thoughts on what's next for the New Zealand borders.